This is Mishmash, a weekly conversation where we try to unjumble an important and sometimes under-the-radar statewide story that affects you. I'm Shayna Roth.
And I'm Zach Orchow. We've got a big primary election coming up here in Michigan. On August 6th, next Tuesday, voters will choose the Democratic and Republican nominees who will face off in the November general election.
That's right. We've got a rare open U.S. Senate seat in Michigan with Debbie Stabenow's retirement, plus a few important contests in the U.S. House and turning from our representation in Washington, D.C. to Lansing, more than a few interesting races for the Michigan House.
So let's talk about that U.S. Senate race. In January of 23, Debbie Stabenow announced that after 24 years, she was retiring from the U.S. Senate. What started out as a potential free-for-all in both parties to succeed her has instead become somewhat anticlimactic. Barring a major shocker, Republican Mike Rogers and Democrat Alyssa Slotkin will emerge as the nominees after Tuesday's vote.
Now, there will be plenty of time to dissect a potential Rogers-Slotkin race, which would become one of the most important in the nation to U.S. Senate control and perhaps give Republicans their best shot at winning a Michigan U.S. Senate seat in 30 years. So, Zach, why did the race for the Republican nomination become so lopsided?
Well, former U.S. Representative Mike Rogers was able to thread the needle and unite both the older school Republican donor wing with the predominant Trump wing of the Republican Party. And he received the former president's endorsement, which has become a massive force in a Republican primary. And then one by one, his top opponents for the Republican nomination gave up. James Craig, Peter Meyer, and finally Sandy Pensler, who spent millions of his fortune to no avail. And all of them realized they could not compete. Rogers' only remaining GOP foes are former Congressman Justin Amash and Dr. Sherry O'Donnell, both of whom are underfunded and show no signs of traction. Shayna, what about the Democrats?
So a slew of Democrats considered the race, folks like Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson and Lieutenant Governor Garland Gilchrist, but ultimately only one Democratic establishment figure jumped in, and her strengths as a candidate caused most of the party to rally to her, and that's Congresswoman Alyssa Slotkin. And she has won one of the most competitive U.S. House seats in America 3 cycles in a row. She's a prolific fundraiser and has used her work in the CIA in both the Bush and Obama administrations to position herself as really a centrist with appeal in both parties.
So Slotkin does have an interesting opponent in the Democratic primary, the actor and author Hill Harper, who's best known for his role in the television show The Good Doctor. He moved to Detroit several years ago, and when he got into the race in early 2023, it seemed like he could be a threat to Slotkin, someone with an actor's charisma, connections to Hollywood money, and to make the case he could be Michigan's first Black U.S. senator. But Harper failed to raise money and only recently went on television, where Slotkin has owned the airwaves for many weeks. And for some reason, only in the last few weeks has he mounted a public relations offensive to introduce himself to the broader electorate. He's really been kind of invisible for almost a year and a half.
Well, we're going to take a short break here, but stick around, because when we come back, we're going to continue our very special pre-primary extravaganza, where we'll get into more detail on the U.S. Senate, U.S. House, and Michigan House races of note on next week's ballot with the Gongwer News Service reporters covering those contests. Stick around.
Welcome back to Mishmash. I'm Zach Gorchow. Joining us now is Gongwer reporter Lily Gwinney, who is tracking key Michigan races for the U.S. House in between keeping tabs on the Olympics. Lily, great to have you on Mishmash.
Great to be on Mishmash for the first time.
So, Lily, the center of gravity when it comes to Tuesday's U.S. House races in Michigan is in my home region, the Tri-Cities, the district with Bay City, Midland, and Saginaw, plus Flint. Congressman Dan Kildee's retirement has set off quite the scramble in both parties for the chance to seek one of the nation's most competitive districts come November. Let's start with the Democrats. Bring us up to speed on that race.
So in the 8th District, we began with this really crowded Democratic primary that has since narrowed itself down a little bit. We've got Senator Kristen McDonald Rivett, who has emerged sort of, she came in a little later in the game than some of our other Democrats there, but has quickly managed to make herself, you know, sort of the favored candidate here. And we also have former Flint Mayor Matt Collier, who has been running a pretty well-funded campaign considering his sort of status within the race. I think he's relied on some of his own funds there a little bit. And then we've got State Board of Education President Pamela Pugh, who hasn't really made that much of a splash in recent weeks. She hasn't made any TV buys. We haven't seen her on the campaign trail a lot recently, but that's who we've got on the Democratic side. And it's sort of been this back and forth largely between McDonald Rivett and Collier in the last couple of weeks, between ads and sort of McDonald Rivett taking on this position as the front runner and already running in a way that she's talking about a Republican opponent and not necessarily her primary opponents.
You know, Lily, one thing that has interested me in this race is that, you know, usually with a primary, you don't see a lot of Democratic elected officials or party organizations endorsing, but that's not the case here. You've got everybody from Governor Whitmer, even the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee is weighing in favor of Kristen McDonald Rivett. That's really upset Pam Pugh.
Yeah.
I assume Matt Collier isn't very happy about it either. What do you think's going on there?
So we saw the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee make McDonald Rivett one of their red to blue candidates in these districts that they've classified as flippable for, or not flippable, sorry, winnable for Democrats in tough areas around the country. And McDonald Rivett has, from that, received an influx of support from national Democrats and from prominent Democrats in the state, like you said, Zach. And, you know, I think maybe for Pam Pugh, there is a little bit of tension there because she came into this race before, I believe, any other Democrat did. She was actually, you know, signed on to run for the Democratic nomination for Senate before Alyssa Slotkin and Hill Harper kind of came onto the scene. She was out there quite early and realized, you know, she couldn't swing the Senate campaign, but she could run for U.S. House. And so, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if there's a little bit of resentment that someone like Kristen McDonald Rivett could come into this primary a little bit later and instantly grab a significant chunk of support. And I know a couple of weeks ago, there was something Pam Pugh called a push poll that went out to some voters in the 8th District where voters were being asked, you know, to signal support for a Democratic candidate, and the bios that were used to denote each candidate were pretty lengthy for McDonald Rivett and Matt Collier. And then Pugh's was left pretty bare bones. She was referred to as the State Board of Education president, and there wasn't much else info about her. And to her, she said that felt racially charged. And so I think, yeah, there's probably some heartburn there for Pam Pugh looking at this race that maybe has gotten away from her a little bit. She might have had a little bit more of a chance before Kristen McDonald Rivett stepped in and kind of, you know, garnered all the support.
Let's talk a little bit about the Republicans. They think with the Kildees finally off the ballot after many, many years, and in an area where Republicans have been gaining for about a decade, that they finally have a real chance to take this seat. What's the latest on the Republican side for this primary race?
Yeah, so we've got Paul Young, who it's not his first rodeo in the 8th District, running a largely self-funded campaign. And then we have former Dow Chemical executive Mary Draves, and the two of them have been locked in this like negative ad battle the past few weeks. It's just sort of now starting to, I don't want to say mellow out, but we saw a new ad from Young last week that was a little more positive, a little more him-centered, a little less Mary Draves-centered. But Mary Draves has been taking this heat from Paul Young and from some other Republicans in the district who are calling her, you know, a closeted liberal or a closeted Democrat. She serves on Governor Whitmer's Climate Solutions Commission. It's a board or a commission. I forget the name. And so that's been a point of contention with some Republicans who say, you know, she's in the Whitmer administration. She has indicated support for diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives during her time in the business world. And so people are looking at her and saying, you know, is she a real Republican? Does she have a real conservative record? And that's what Paul Young has been able to really attack her on the last few weeks. So it's been a little contentious. Mary Draves has, you know, She's clapped back in whatever way she can. She's deleted some tweets off of her personal account in which she voiced support for things like President Biden rejoining the Paris Climate Accords, things like that. And, you know, she's still trailing Young financially and in polling. So, it's an uphill battle for her. But I think she spent so much time now on the defense that she hasn't really gotten that opportunity to make herself more of a recognized name in the area.
So let's move to Detroit, where first-term Congressman Sri Tanadar is seeking a second term. It's been kind of a wild cycle where his top opponent, Adam Ollier, was thrown off the ballot for lack of valid signatures. But Detroit City Council member Mary Waters has emerged as someone that a lot of people have thrown their support behind to restore Black representation to Congress in Detroit. Detroit Mayor Mike Duggan, Wayne County Executive Warren Evans, among many others, are supporting her. But does she have any chance against Sri's millions?
I mean, it's really hard to say, right? We saw all of these really significant endorsements come out for Waters early in her candidacy after Adam Ollier was ousted from the ballot. And I remember, you know, being at the Mackinac Policy Conference and watching Mayor Duggan endorse her, thinking, is this going to be like a really big watershed moment for this campaign? And since then, we just haven't really seen a whole lot more development. You know, she didn't have a bad campaign finance report last time around. She's obviously not in a position to self-fund in the way that Rep. Tanadar is. And I think, you know, it's another situation where you've got a person who, you know, really, like Sri Tanadar, has not been the most popular in his own district. People have complaints about his constituent services. They have complaints about, you know, promises met and promises delivered, et cetera. But it's hard to say whether or not Mary Waters kind of has that momentum to carry her through when she didn't necessarily come into this race late, but she wasn't really considered a serious contender until after Ollier was taken off the ballot. So she was at a disadvantage there. And, you know, as great as having these endorsements, these high profile endorsements can be, it can't really get you where you need to go if you don't have the money and the organization behind you. And that's not to say that she doesn't have the organization behind her, because I've seen some very significant support from her, from Detroiters and people who say, you know, they were Ollier supporters and now they're Mary Waters supporters. And they got out there and they started hitting doors and talking to people. But I mean, at the end of the day, you've got a sitting congressman who's got a lot of money. He's able to put his own budget up, and I just don't know if that's going to be something she can overcome.
So probably the most competitive race among our U.S. House districts on Tuesday is the 3rd District Republican primary over where I live now, Grand Rapids, and Muskegon, for the right to presumably take on Congresswoman Hillary Scholten, a first-term Democrat. There's 2 Republicans there, Paul Hudson and Mike Markey. Why does this race seem more even?
So, you know, we've got these 2 candidates here who not one of them has, you haven't really seen one of them emerge as, you know, a Trumpier candidate or necessarily the more conservative candidate. They can both lay this sort of semi-equal claim to being that conservative voice, which in the Grand Rapids area can really get you somewhere. You know, we have a contingent of voters there who are pretty far right and who are big supporters of the former president. So I think, you know, they both are in a situation where they can lay pretty equal claim. You know, either one could be classified as the more conservative or more politically aligned with, you know, what has now become the mainstream Republican Party nationally. And against a person like Hillary Scholten, who has, you know, been able to capitalize on shifts in Kent County and shifts in the Grand Rapids area and how people are voting and how people are looking at politics nationally and statewide, I think it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how whichever one of these Republican candidates pulls through, how they're able to kind of take Kent County in that area, you know, if they can take it back to what it was in 2016, where we saw Donald Trump pull off a pretty noticeable victory there.
Lily, thanks for joining us on Mishmash.
Thanks for having me, Zach.
So up next, we're going to dig into the U.S. Senate primary. Moving right along, we're now joined by Gongwer marathoner and metalhead, Nick Smith. Nick, welcome back to Mishmash.
Thanks for having me.
So, Nick, the U.S. Senate primary was kind of blown wide open when longtime Senator Debbie Stabenow announced that she was not seeking re-election. Who are the current candidates in this race?
On the Republican side, we have former U.S. Representative Mike Rogers. Also, we have former U.S. Representative Justin Amash, and we also have Sherry O'Donnell out of Stevensville. On the Democratic side, we have current Congresswoman Alyssa Slotkin, and challenging her is Hill Harper. He's an author, actor, and also owns a business in downtown Detroit.
So let's talk about that Democratic primary. Slotkin seems like pretty much a lock for the Democrats. She's dominated in fundraising. I raised something like 10 to 20 times the amount Hill Harper has all over the airwaves. But choosing her has not come without some internal consternation within the Democratic Party yet. Nick, can you give us the broad strokes of what's going on there?
Yeah. There has been some internal discussions and conflict regarding having people come in and try to have more establishment candidates being kind of, I guess, crowned kind of early on in the process, kind of locking others out. Been some pushback perhaps from, the Black community and voters in Southeast Michigan, some of the other groups that have voiced some opposition, such as the Uncommitted group that was voting against President Joe Biden during the presidential primary. There's been some dynamics of that nature.
So the Republicans took some time to figure out who should be the front runner in this primary race. But GOP establishment lured former U.S. Congressman Mike Rogers out of retirement for this open seat. Now he's got the coveted endorsement from Donald Trump. How are things looking for him? And is there a potential for an upset here?
He is looking really strong right now for this particular race, for the primary. You have Amash coming in as a former representative, but it just doesn't seem that he really is going to have the pull from a lot of primary voters in this race, given the Trump endorsement, as well as the fact that, well, he also voted for impeachment when he was still in Congress. So that's probably going to play against him a bit. And Ms. O'Donnell is not really a very well-known quantity, so I don't expect her to gain much traction either.
Nick, if it does end up being Alyssa Slotkin versus Mike Rogers, how big a race is this going to be nationally? Of course, the U.S. Senate is a hair's breadth apart between the current Democratic majority and Republican minority.
This is going to be one of a handful of races that's going to determine control of the chamber. With Michigan being really divided, the last few U.S. Senate races have actually been increasingly becoming narrow margins. This is probably going to continue that trend, given that it's an open seat. Democrats may have a very slight edge, given the fact that they've won every race in Michigan in these seats since 2000. But Rogers, he's been walking a pretty solid line, balancing Trump supporters and trying to balance a bit more of his moderate background from when he was in Congress. Also, Slotkin's going to have quite a dogfight, but she has won very difficult races in every race that she's ran for Congress. So she gives the Democrats probably their best shot at maintaining that streak.
All right, Nick, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me again.
So finally, we're going to dive into the state house races.
Welcome now to Gongwer House reporter Elena Dernbaugh, also our resident volleyball all-star, to talk about some interesting state house primaries. Welcome, Elena.
Thank you very much. You know, I have to have hobbies outside of house primaries, so.
Thank goodness.
Elena, many people may not realize that probably 95 of the 110 Michigan House seats are so strongly Democratic or strongly Republican that the primary effectively decides the winner of the November election. I mean, it's just like a rubber stamp. There's a few seats like that with no incumbent that will be decided on August 6th. Can you tell us about those?
Absolutely. So we have the 7th House District that is currently held by Rep. Abraham Ayash, a strongly Democratic seat. And so whoever wins the primary there will be coming through in November. And the biggest contender in that race really is Tonya Myers Phillips. She doesn't have a whole lot of even competition in that race. There are some other people filed, but they haven't raised the amount of money, and she has the backing of Ayash. So, you know, if she comes through the primary, as it kind of looks like she will, she is likely to win that seat in November. And then on the Republican side, we have the 35th House District, which is currently held by Rep. Andrew Fink in the Hillsdale area. A couple different folks running for that seat. There's Adam Stockford, who is the current mayor of Hillsdale. He is, you know, very solidly conservative. He has been backed by the far right contingent of House Republicans, the Grand New Party. And then we have Tom Matthew, who sits on the Branch County Board of Commissioners, and Jennifer Wartz, who doesn't have a lot of experience in politics, but has done a lot with farming and agriculture and has been endorsed by the Michigan Farm Bureau. So those are two examples of seats that, you know, whoever wins the primary will be winning in November.
So one of the interesting things about the state house is that so many incumbents, both Republicans and Democrats, are facing challengers for renomination in their primary. You know, typically you don't see that from inside the family, so to speak. Why do you think we're seeing so many incumbents having to fight for their spot on the November ballot? And do you see any pattern to any of it?
Yeah, I mean, in a few cases, we have redistricting has introduced new opportunities for challenges. An example of that is Rep. McFall's seat. With redistricting, his district has changed and now includes the city of Warren, which opened up an opportunity for former Warren Mayor Jim Fouts to challenge him in the primary. And that is certainly going to be an interesting race, as we have the incumbent going up against a very well-known name in the Warren area who's been around for a long time. So that's definitely a race that we are watching. Fouts has spent a lot of money in the race, $73,000 with $26,000 on hand, and McFall has $48,000 on hand, but has only spent $37,000. So that's an interesting one. You know, and then in other places, we have incumbents who have challengers. I mean, it kind of sounds like, because some of the more conservative Republicans in the House have gotten primary challengers because the district isn't necessarily happy with the lack of influence they're having on the House floor, because they vote no and aren't on committees. An example of that is the 107th House District, which is, I'm being told, kind of a neck and neck race right now with Rep. Neil Frisky, the incumbent, being challenged by Parker Fairbairn. And
that's up in the Straits of Mackinac area.
Yes. And there has been, Fairbairn has spent $120,000 against Frisky. And, you know, he said that folks in the district are just kind of fed up with the fact that Frisky doesn't sit on any committees. We've seen other incumbents throughout the state with similar challengers for that reason. We have a challenger to Josh Shriver in the 66th House District, a couple challengers to Cara in the 36th, and challenger to Matt Maddock in the 51st. None of those races are necessarily as close as the Frisky race, but similar themes in why people are challenging the incumbent.
So for Democrats, they're hoping to keep control of the House come November, and Republicans are hoping to take control. It's going to be very tight. Now, the party tends to stay out of primaries. Both parties, actually, I should say, tend to stay out of primaries and not back anyone until the final candidates are chosen. But given how much is at stake in November, are we seeing any attempts to make sure the most viable candidates win in these races?
Yes and no. The two parties have been fairly quiet on who, you know, they'd like to see come through the race, you know, especially if it is a safe Republican or a safe Democratic seat who comes through doesn't really matter to the respective caucuses. They might have someone they would rather work with, but, you know, it's kind of like, well, if we keep the seat, we keep the seat, and what works works. We have seen, you know, groups that will typically back a Republican or a Democrat get involved in the primary. You know, we have the Small Business Association of Michigan backing Parker Fairbairn in the 107th against Frisky. He's come through with a lot of other endorsements up there, too. You know, we have the race in the 78th House District where Gina Johnson has a challenger to her incumbent seat. She's received a lot of those typical Republican endorsements as opposed to her challenger. So while the respective House parties are not kind of wading into the races, we are seeing organizations, donors kind of line up behind their preferred candidate.
I don't know about you, Elena, but I am just very relieved we are not having to cover 80 House primaries this time around, because the term limits law change means we only have a handful of open seats, not dozens and dozens and dozens.
Personally, very relieved. You know, there are 110 House districts, and, you know, they all come up every 2 years. And if you have new folks in each and every one of them, as we did basically in 2022, that's so many people to keep track of.
Well, thanks for coming on Mishmash, Elena.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks again to all of our guests. Great reporting, as always, from Gongwer. Mishmash is produced by WDET, Detroit's NPR station, in collaboration with the Gongwer News Service. Mishmash is hosted and produced by me, Shayna Roth, and Gongwer's Zach Gorchow and Alethea Kasbin.
Additional production and editing by Hearns Laguerre Jr. Mixing, mastering, and music by Sam Bobian.
Our digital team is Dave Kim, Sophia Joswiak, and Jenny Sherman. Our news director is Jerome Vaughn, and our podcast manager is David Lyons. As always, if you listen to this podcast, and we really hope that you enjoy it, we hope that you enjoy it so much that you want to support it, you can do so by leaving us a review or comment wherever you listen. You can subscribe or follow us on Spotify, Apple, YouTube, basically wherever you get your podcasts.
Tell your friends about how much you've learned from Mishmash, and please send them a link. Learn more about Gongwer News Service at GONGWER.com.
Remember, we're produced by a public radio station, which means we are listener supported. So if you really, 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 really like this show, you can support WDET by going to WDET.org/give. We'll talk to you next week.